This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Hello, good night, and welcome to The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. Thank you for joining me this Tuesday evening on Guardian Radio 96.9 for another exciting show on all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. I just want to take a moment and speak to all those who have lost somebody recently. It seems like we're having a lot of deaths right now, a lot of people passing away quite suddenly. Within my own family, I would say my husband's uncle passed away, and just before the funeral, another uncle passed. And so our family as well is dealing with a lot of grief and a lot of death. I find that a lot of other families are dealing with the same. And so I just want to take a moment for everybody that has lost someone, whether it be now or during the pandemic, you know, just to take a moment to empathize with you and feel for you and pray for you that everything will be okay. And to help you get through it, just be strong in order to deal with this. But a lot seems to be going on. A lot of people are really dealing with a lot of things right now. And you know, I wear really my heart on my sleeve, so I really kind of feel this stuff. And it seems like everybody I turn to has had a recent death in the family. And so my heart just goes on out to everybody. It's a difficult time around the world and in the Bahamas. So if you've had a death of a loved one, my heart goes on to you, out to you. Please express your feelings, find support. And if you're having a really difficult time, please reach out to someone, whether it be your physician or a family member or your pastor or anything like that. So please have my condolences and pray for my family as well. And so tonight, I was really going to talk about dyslipidemia or high cholesterol, but I also want to talk about sudden heart attack as well, a little bit in there, because it seems to be very common and people are dealing with that. So as we get into it, we will talk about those signs and how to look out for those particular symptomatology. I think it's really, really important. You know, cardiovascular disease is one of the number one killers, really is the number one killer when it comes to NCDs in our country. And we kind of forget that all of the things that we talk about come and they culminate, you know, and a lot of times lead to things like heart disease. And so we're going to talk a little bit about elevated cholesterol, because I find that that's what we consider like the silent killer. There really aren't a lot of symptoms specifically geared towards people whose cholesterol is elevated. But then we can see that when you have elevated cholesterol, how that can lead to ischemic heart disease and other problems. We can lead to stuff like a heart attack. One of the things that I find very common is that a lot of people don't realize that when we talk about cholesterol, there are different types of cholesterol. So, you know, when we use the word cholesterol, it's kind of all encompassing on a variety of different things. And so we kind of collectively put together and say, you know, you have to watch your cholesterol. So most Bahamians will know that term of my cholesterol being high or elevated, and I have to watch out for certain things. But the cholesterols are really broken down into different types of cholesterol. You have your high density lipoproteins, which we call the HDL. So you'll hear doctors saying that your HDL is a certain number, your LDL is a certain number. And then, of course, the one that we call your LDL being your low density lipoproteins. And then, of course, your triglycerides, which is one that we don't talk about a lot. But then sometimes you can have just an elevated in your triglycerides. And if you just do a overall cholesterol, you're not aware of that. So what a lot of doctors do nowadays is they look at your cholesterol and they look at these numbers and they use that in a score to kind of decide if you're going to be at risk for heart disease or not. So it's a lot more complex, a lot more to it than just elevations in your cholesterol. There are different types and we measure each one of those. So if you're just getting a basic panel and just your regular cholesterol is being measured, and you have someone who's at risk or you have a family history of heart disease or atherosclerosis, you know, you may want to get that full panel done. So you want to ensure that you're getting that done if you have any risk factors. And so your LDL cholesterol and your triglycerides are the ones that aren't as good for you. These are the ones that kind of lead you into problems. And so when we talk about different types of cholesterol, you have some that are good for you and some that are not so good for you, and we measure them all. So when we talk about the HDL cholesterol, this is the cholesterol that we tend to be more cardioprotective, where you find in your omega-3 fatty oils, when we tell you to eat salmon and avocado and different things, and that tends to be what we call your good cholesterol, and it actually helps to remove the bad cholesterol from your body. So that's why we would want that number to be elevated, and that's your HDL. And that number, when you look at it, so when you ask your doctor specifically, how is my HDL, they would want that to be over a certain number. And this allows us to know that you are going to clear some of the bad cholesterol a lot better. So what about those bad cholesterols? Well, the LDL, which is the low density version, the high density is good, the low density, not so good. Is the one we really consider like the bad cholesterol. That's because this type of cholesterol tends to build up in your arteries. It comes and it makes little clumps and it creates like little plaques or little lesions on the surface of your vessels and on your artery walls. And this is the walls that allow your blood to flow back and forth to different organs, to your heart. And so when you get too much of this plaque or these little clumps of cholesterol inside the vessels that lead to your heart, this is what would cause heart attack. So those cholesterols are bad and you want to keep those numbers lower. The other type of cholesterol that you can get is your triglycerides. And this comes mostly from the calories you eat, but you don't burn away. So this is the cholesterol that gets stored in your fat cells. And they release energy and use them to burn off. So if you eat a lot of calories and you're not burning off, you can end up with your triglycerides being elevated and this can build up as well. And so what really causes this to happen? Well, a lot of different things are part of the factors. And what you will find is that some families have actually are predisposed to this. So you have a familial component to hyperlipidemia or high cholesterol. So you'll find that certain families, you'll see that all of them have had high cholesterol or there's a family history of heart attacks. And that's why it's really important to know your family history and be able to bring that information to your physician because it allows us to know where your risk stratification is. And so those persons can have problems with cholesterol even very early in their teens or in their 20s because there is a genetic component, something they've gotten from their family via DNA that can lead them to having these higher risks for heart attacks and coronary issues. And so we have to know more about that. So there's different ones that you can have depending on your family background. So it's really good to kind of dig into that family history and find out why grandpa passed away or why your father died or your mother or whatever, because these are really kind of clues to kind of give you an idea if you're someone who's a little bit more at risk. And so you can have like this primary or secondary reasons why you would have high cholesterol. And of course, if you are just the diet and the things that you're eating are going to be those issues as well. So what kind of symptomatology would you expect to have? It's hard to tell. And this is kind of the scary component of having high cholesterol, is because there really aren't a lot of signs or symptoms. What usually happens is when your cholesterol gets elevated, for some people, you end up with things like hypertension, and that becomes a sign or a symptom that your cholesterol is elevated. But there aren't a lot of other obvious symptoms, right? So it leads more into later problems of cardiovascular disease, where you can have more symptomatology and end up even with what we call peripheral artery disease, and where there are blockages in the legs, and some people experience pain or chest pain or other things, symptoms because of that. And so at that point, it's kind of later in the game when the cholesterol is really kind of built up inside the vessels. So that can affect places like the heart and give you chest pain. It can also affect your legs and your lower limbs. So if you're having pain on walking, if you're having severe pain that, you know, every time you try to do some exercise is a problem, then you want to consider whether you may have an issue with cholesterol. So what are the risks and who are at risk? Various people can be at risk for different reasons. We talked about those persons who basically have a familial or family component, but we also have people who create risks for themselves. So persons who are smokers, if you are a smoker and you smoke cigarettes, you may be eating healthy and doing everything else, but because you're a smoker, you're actually more at risk of having this elevated cholesterol level. If you are severely obese, so if you're way overweight and you don't exercise and you have what we call a sedentary lifestyle, you're never, you know, you're always sitting at every opportunity, then that also increases your risk of having elevated cholesterol. And if you have a high consumption of saturated foods and fatty foods, then this also is a risk factor. People don't realize that excessive alcohol drinking can also lead to you having issues with your cholesterol, and specifically contributes to your triglycerides that we talked about earlier being elevated and becoming a problem. And remember, we talked about the triglycerides are the ones that are the storage fat that sits in your fat cells. As you get older, you tend to have a higher risk factor for having cholesterol. And women tend to have a lower LDL level than men until menopause. So us women, until we go into menopause, we seem to have a bit of protection. But after menopause, some of that protection starts to go away. And we become at similar risk as the men. So you'll find that earlier in life, you will see more heart attacks, high cholesterol in men. And then after menopause, you'll find that some women, their risk factor goes up quite significantly. And so their LDL or their low density lipoproteins, lipids start to rise. And that would be after menopause. There are other medical conditions, of course, that we all know are related to people having elevated cholesterol. And so for our diabetics out there, if you are a type 2 diabetic, so that means that you got diabetes later in life, you would be somebody who would be more at risk or more prone to have elevated cholesterol. Also, persons with hypothyroid. So if your thyroid hormones are produced at a lower level and the doctor has told you that you have a low producing thyroid, then you also are more at risk for having a high level of cholesterol. And then our persons with chronic kidney disease. So, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where all of these chronic diseases kind of come together. So persons with chronic kidney disease tend to have a battle with cholesterol as well. Also, we talked about the good cholesterol. So if you have a very low number of your good cholesterol, then you also are more prone, because remember we said that the HDL or the good cholesterol helps to get rid of that bad LDL in our blood. So by having lower levels, that means we're not getting rid of the LDL as well as we can. And then that can make you also prone to having an elevated cholesterol. So yeah, that's quite a few things to take in there, that we have good and bad cholesterol. It can be caused by various different reasons, and there are risk factors that lead to that, and that can lead to heart disease. So how do we know? How do we find out if we have high cholesterol or not? We simply have to take a test. So I told you that a lot of people do a general cholesterol test, but what you really want to do is you want to do a full panel. So you want to request, when you're getting your annuals done, you want to request getting a full panel for your cholesterol, where you get to see not only your total cholesterol, but your LDL, your HDL, and your triglycerides. And this will allow you to know if your levels are high or low, and it is within a good range or a healthy range for you. These numbers can change from year to year, so you want to keep up with them, especially if you do have risk factors. So your annual blood work is really the time to do it. So I encourage everyone to get their annuals done. It's really, really important for your preventative health status. And then, you know, when that does happen, then you have to have a discussion based on your risk factors of how to now manage that. I would say with my patients, I really try to start them on a dietary and lifestyle change before even discussing medication, because sometimes it just is just things inside of your environment and things that you're putting in your body that you can kind of right away realize that you're making. And a lot of patients come in and they realize right away when I say, you know, your cholesterol is elevated. What do you think it could be? Are you eating certain things? Most people have an idea of the things that they're eating and they're doing that could be contributing to that. And so if you're willing to make those changes, you know, you can avoid medication in a lot of circumstances if you're willing to really listen to the doctor in terms of lifestyle modification. If not, you know, you're gonna likely be recommended to start on a medication like a statin, where they put you on something to lower your cholesterol levels. I've had patients in the past who have been on cholesterol medication, and they've been able to reduce their risk by making the changes that we discussed, and we're able to scale back on that medication if they happen to be on it. And so usually that's one of the really the goals of trying to get people off medication or on the minimal amount of medication possible. Some people will always have to take it, especially if there is a familial or a family component. But for many people, there are ways to kind of adjust, get off, or reduce your medication. But you have to be willing to work fairly, you know, hard, or, you know, make the relative changes. And so we talk about the stages of changes. People have to be willing to make those changes, those personal changes, to make a difference in their life. And so there are a variety of different drugs that you can use, but really lifestyle is very, very important. And so you want to then look at a lot of the foods that are going to help you with that. And of course, exercise is also a really, really important component when you're talking about lowering your cholesterol. So you want to burn that fat. You want to get rid of the excesses we talked about in the triglycerides. So you want to marry your changes in your diet with your exercise regimen. And you want to take a deep dive into the types of foods that you're eating that could be contributing to the situation. Because like we talked about, heart disease really is the number one cause of death. And what we like to encourage is that you do have those higher levels of HDL or good cholesterol in your body. And then you want to add foods that are going to improve or decrease your risk factors. And one of those foods that are really good for people who have high cholesterol and are going to help you with lowering it, and we'll talk about the top 13 of those foods that you really would want to add to your diet. So if you're trying to make that change, you don't want to end up on medication, you want to listen really closely to these are the types of foods that are going to help you to lower your levels of cholesterol. So the first one we're going to talk about is what we call legumes. And these are your beans, your peas, and your lentils. This particular plant food group contains a lot of fiber, a lot of minerals, and a lot of protein. And so if you replace a lot of your refined grains with these legumes, the beans, the peas, and the lentils. See, those older people, they knew what they were talking about when they put bean and peas in our rice. They were trying to get the fiber in us, even if we didn't want to eat it. And so these foods are going to be the ones, one of the number one foods to lower your risk of heart disease. And there were over 26 randomized controlled studies that looked at eating half a cup or 100 grams of legumes per day as an effective way of lowering the bad or the LDL cholesterol. And what they found is an average of 6.6 milligrams per DL compared to not eating legumes. So they were able to decrease that by 6.6. So you see, it's not a ton, but if you're that person that's kind of borderline, you can see how adjusting your diet can be very effective. So just legumes alone, the peas, the beans, and the lentil can drop the number for your bad cholesterol by about 6 or more. So that's pretty good. And other studies link weight loss and the diet, and whilst not restricting calories, is also helpful to combine when you're adding that amount of legumes. So you're really replacing those proteins, the legumes, for foods that you're already eating and not adding more to it and not really restricting your diet, but just adding that as a portion of your diet. And the legumes like beans, peas, and lentils can help to lower that bad cholesterol. And it's a really great source of your plant based proteins. So number two on our list would be our avocados. Avocados are really, really nutrient-dense fruits, and they are a rich source of your monounsaturated fats and fibers. And the two nutrients they help lower is your bad LDL and your good HDL goes up. So it brings down the bad cholesterol and it brings up the really good cholesterol. And studies have shown that it has cholesterol-lowering effects. So one study found that overweight and obese adults with high LDL cholesterol who ate one avocado daily lowered their LDL levels more than those who didn't eat any avocados. And so you may not want to eat a whole avocado, but you can see by introducing avocado to now your mixture in your diet, these are the components that are going to help overall. They looked at 10 different studies that substituted avocados for other fats and were linked to lower cholesterol, LDL, and triglycerides. So by using the good fats instead of the bad fats, you're going to be switching out these foods, and that's how you're going to be really good. So in summary, the avocado provides monounsaturated fatty acids and fiber to heart-healthy and cholesterol-lowering nutrients. What's number three on our list? Probably something you really like, nuts, especially your almonds and your walnuts. So when we look at our almonds and our walnuts, these are our exceptionally nutrient-dense foods, and they have high monounsaturated fats. Walnuts in particular are also rich in plant variety omega-3 fatty acids and a type of polyunsaturated fat associated with heart health. Almonds and other nuts are particularly rich in L-arginine, an amino acid that helps your body to make nitric oxide, and thus in turn, it helps regulate your blood pressure. So you can see that almonds are not only great for your cholesterol, they can also help in your regulation of your blood pressure. So if you're a person with high cholesterol and hypertension, then almond may be that nut for you. Okay, so and these nuts also contain so many other nutrients that help to lower cholesterol, such as phytosterols, which absorb the fat in your intestines. So there's different methods in which these foods are working inside of your body to decrease cholesterol. They contain calcium and magnesium and potassium. And they may reduce your blood pressure and your overall risk for heart disease. So nuts are really, really good. Sorry for those of you who have nut allergies, this is not for you, But for those of us that can't eat nuts, they are a great way of helping to add to our healthy diet. So when we looked at about 25 different studies, eating 2 to 3 servings of nuts per day decreased the bad LDL by an average of 10 milligrams. So really even better than the avocado. And so you can think about if you're adding, you know, these here and there and or even together, you're going to have that type of improvement where you may not even need medication. So eating a daily serving of nuts is linked to 28% lower risk of both fatal and non-fatal heart disease. That's pretty amazing. All right. So in summary, nuts are rich in cholesterol, low in fat and fiber, as well as minerals linked to improve heart health. So overall heart health, nuts are just extremely, extremely good. Number 4 on our list is our fatty fish. I guess most of you would have heard this before, that your fatty fish, such as salmon, mackerel, all of these are really, really great, excellent sources of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. And they bolster heart health by increasing your good HDL, your cholesterol, and they lower inflammation and stroke risk. So not only do they reduce your cholesterol, they work against inflammation and they reduce your risk of stroke, which is another consequence of this type of plaque-like atherosclerotic disease. And inflammation has been found in a variety of different illnesses. Usually any chronic illness that you find, you will find some pathway that leads you back to some form of inflammation. And so you wanna have these foods that are gonna be anti-inflammatory as a stable part of your diet. And I also like to add some glutathione and some vitamin C as well to help with that. And so in one large trial, 25-year study in adults, those who had ate mostly non-fried fish were the least likely to develop metabolic syndrome, a cluster of symptoms that include high blood pressure and low HDL. So what they found was, and I'm sorry for Bahamians because, you know, we like to eat our fish fried, but what they're saying is these fatty fish are actually best when they're not fried. So this is baked, grilled, any other thing. Frying them, you know, we are adding back some of that fat and cholesterol that we're trying to get rid of. So the study saw that those fish that were not fried, so no fried fish is probably will not be the one to lower your cholesterol. But eating these other fatty fish without them being fried are going to be the type of things that are going to lower your cholesterol and lower your risk of stroke. And that percentage is 27%. So that's really, really pretty good. And they're talking about things like tuna and baked or boiled fish. Of course, we talk about salmon and all the other ones as well. And you have to keep in mind that the healthiest way to cook these fish is steaming and stewing. So our boiled fish, our traditional Bahamian boiled fish, might be one of those things that we consider to be really one of the healthy ways of eating. And so boiling our food, stewing them, steaming them are probably going to be a lot better for your heart risk and decreasing your chances of stroke. Fish in a major part of the Mediterranean diet, which is extensively studied for its benefits and its heart health. Some of the heart protective benefits of fish may also come from certain peptides that are found in the fish itself. So in summary, fatty fish offers high levels of omega-3 fatty acids and is also linked to a decrease in heart disease and stroke. But remember that fish is not the fried fish, but it's boiled or steamed or cooked another way. I think this one that's coming up, number 5, is one that we hardly kind of use in the Bahamas. But our whole grains, especially our oats and our barley, I found a lot of Bahamians may eat oats. We don't really get into the other grains, such as barley. I know a few years back when I had gone like completely organic at one point with my first child, I found a really interesting thing called cracked wheat. I haven't been able to really find it. It took forever to cook. Like you would be cooking this thing for like 3 hours. But I thought it was absolutely delicious. And it was one of the like really whole grains thing that I really, really enjoyed. But it was really, really hard to find. And it was really, really hard to cook. But extensive research has gone into how grains basically lower heart disease risk. And a review of over 45 studies have linked eating 3 servings of whole grains daily to a 20% lower risk of heart disease and stroke. Benefits were even greater when people were eating more servings of 7 whole grains. So as you can see, you're changing out these things or things in your diet. So this is where you can get rid of a lot of the bad foods that are affecting you, because you're consuming quite a bunch of your grains. If you're doing the fatty fish, if you're doing the nuts, if you're doing the avocado and all of these things are really going to start to fill up your diet, and you'll find that you don't have as much room for the other stuff. All right. So whole grains keep all parts of the grain intact, which provides them with more vitamins, minerals, and plant components and fiber than refined grains. So what we tend to get when we go to the supermarket and we purchase regular bread and stuff, we get really refined grains. And that's not what's giving us this kind of cardioprotectiveness as the whole grain. So you really have to go out, seek out, and search whole grains. You tend to find that even breads that contain whole grains are really expensive. And so you'll find that you're going to limit what you're eating anyway if you're eating this kind of healthy diet. It's just really costly. And so I would say still try to do these things, but I say that you won't eat as much, and so that will actually cut down on the amount that you're eating. The whole grains are really, really good. And so what do we have in that? 2 grains in particular are oats, which contain beta-glucan. It is a type of soluble fiber that lowers cholesterol, and eating oats may lower your cholesterol by about 5% and the bad LDL cholesterol by about 7%. So your overall cholesterol 5 and your bad LDL 7. So you can see that some of the other things that we talked about even lowered even more, but most Bahamians will know about eating oats in the morning. When we look at something like barley, which also can lower the bad LDL. So whole grains are linked to a lower risk of heart disease. Oats and barley can provide beta-glucan and a soluble fiber that is effective in lowering our bad LDL cholesterol. Okay, we'll do a couple more of these before we take our break. And fruits and berries, so that's something that we can all enjoy. Fruit is an excellent addition to heart healthy diet for several reasons, because we don't realize that, there's a lot of soluble fiber in fruits. So you want to have fruits in your diet. And this works really well at lowering your cholesterol. So you want to encourage your body to get rid of the cholesterol and stop your liver from producing this compound. So you hear about people with fatty liver and fat around the organs. That's because of excessive fat and cholesterol. So one kind of soluble fiber called pectin lowers cholesterol up to 10%. It's found in fruits including apples, grapes, citrus fruits, and strawberries. So you can see this diet is now really, really developing. So if you're really at risk, especially our people with a family history of high cholesterol, you really want to have a clean, clean diet. Fruits also contain bioactive components that help prevent heart disease and other chronic diseases due to antioxidants and anti-inflammatory effects. Eating berries and grapes, which are particularly rich in these compounds, really, really help your good HDL and lower your bad HDL. So fruit can help lower your cholesterol, improve heart health, and this is largely due to fiber contained in the fruits as well as the antioxidants. So that's why it's really good to eat even the fruit, skin, the grapes, and things like berries, where the skin is really palatable. It allows you to get fiber in a really, really tasty manner, especially if you're not so big on the grains. Something that's most of us will like and enjoy, but then you have to have a taste for, is your dark chocolate or your cocoa or your cocoa. Your cocoa is the main ingredient for your dark chocolate. And it may seem too good to be true, but dark chocolate or cocoa can lower your bad LDL. So when we talk about dark chocolate, most dark chocolate is going to be like 70% chocolate. So it's going to be that really rich kind of bitter tasting chocolate. But we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, good night. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Can you hear me, caller?
Hello.
Yes, caller, we can hear you.
Hello.
Caller, we can hear you.
You can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Doc, how you doing?
Good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. You know, Doc, one thing I like with you, you are different to all the doctors that I attend. Not saying that I had any cholesterol or high blood pressure or anything, but one thing, you address the diet first. You know, before you put anybody on medication, you said, hey, change your diet. What your diet is like, what you're eating. Because like you said, the majority of this cholesterol and high blood pressure comes from our diet, the things that we put in our body on a daily basis. And would you just call off, that's my main dish all the time. I'm going to just eat some soup right now. Let me tell you what I have in that soup. I have some lentils, yes. Black beans, mm-hmm. Chickpeas,
yes.
Okra, onions, celery. I put a little bit of chia seeds in that. Also, I put a little bit of the gel sea moss.
Okay.
I put some of that, the green beans. So that's what, because, you know, I don't eat meat at all. So mm-hmm. that's what I put, and that's what I'm going to eat. And I just put a little bit of quinoa on the side. And that's my dish.
And, you know? And like you said, you probably have had no issues with your cholesterol.
No, none yeah. whatsoever. Never, no high blood pressure or anything mm-hmm. like that. But, Doc, I think if I didn't, 14 years ago, I came off red meat. And then about 10 to 12 years ago, I came off all chicken and turkey and everything. And I've been married now 36 years. This year, I'll make 37. And still could wear the same size clothes.
Oh, weirdo.
But before I changed my diet, Doc, I think if I didn't, I might have ended up, because my mom used to work in Exuma to the hotel, and she used to bring home the big steak and pork chop mm-hmm. and lamb chop and, you know, chuck roll. And I used to sit down sometime, eat two pork chop, two steaks, cook a pot of white rice, choke mm-hmm. butter on it. Or bake a Johnny cake, a small one, butter on it, throw cheese on it, and eat it. Eat a whole can of corned beef by myself with white rice. So I think if I didn't change my diet, I might have ended up with cholesterol and everything, but I never put on any weight. Never.
Yeah.
Never put on an ounce of weight. And so all those things, I eat all the walnuts, the almonds, the what you call it, pistachios and all of that stuff. And I'm 67, I'll be 67 in October, and I give God thanks, you know, because I'm still running marathon. I still work out, still could get down and do 100 push-ups and a set. Then I get down, I end up doing with 400 or 500 push-ups, squats, 200 to 300 squats, and everything. And like I said, I give God thanks for the body that he has given me and the wisdom he has given to me. You know, just to try to, on a daily basis, just eat healthy food each and every day. Drink a lot of water. Drink my bush tea, my guava tea leaf, pear leaf tea, soursop, the fever grass, you know. So those things I take in on a daily basis. But, Doc, like I said, I you might not remember me. This is Mr. Douglas Storr. And I really appreciate you. And when you come in to see you, you sit, you talk, and, you know, you find out everything, and you don't, there's no hidden agenda or anything. And you always try to say, hey, and every time I listen on the radio, watch your diet, what you're putting in your body. And that's the key factor right there. So just continue to keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, caller. Yes, it's super, super important. And you mightn't realize it, but even in medical school, you know, our first step that we're taught that we should go is really lifestyle. You know, we get bogged up in medication because we see so many patients that are ill or really far along. But we always have to remember our principles and try to get people on the right track. And that's why it's really important. And that's why I'm a primary care provider, because I would like to meet you before you're ill. I would like to meet you when you're well. Because my job is to keep you well. And if we can do that as early as possible, like how you made those changes and you're able to live really well and be comfortable at your age and still be very active, that's what we really all want in life. We want to live a long, happy life. And we want to get to a golden age where we can still be productive and be the person that we want to be. Nobody wants to get old, retire, and then have someone else have to take care of you because you're sick. And so this is what a cleaner lifestyle, eating healthy and trying to keep all those comorbidities off of you does for you. Because I can tell you, I can see a 60-year-old who's looking like a 40-year-old and a 60-year-old who's looking like a 70-year-old just because of the conditions. And the pill load and the burden that they have on them. So I do as much as I can to keep you off medication. Medication is necessary at some points.
But if we
take that first step and we can really go hard there. I keep a lot of people off medication and even be able to cut down. So really, thank you, caller, very much. I appreciate that you appreciate what I do. and so that's what we try to do. That reminds me, a patient came in and was a new patient. And he said, "Doc, you know, I switched over. My doctor's retired. I wanted a new doctor, so I chose you." And he was on a whole bag of medication. It was like, I think there were about 10 medications. And so I kind of went through the medication, because if you're a new patient, I like to see what medication you were on, because I find over time, going from one doctor to another doctor, or having multiple doctors actually, sometimes the pill burden can get really high and it starts adding up. And unless you have a physician who's going to be your primary care physician that is going to take an assessment of everything and be able to coordinate your care, you can end up on multiple medications and don't even know why. So the gentleman was on a lot of medication. He didn't know why. And we were able to come up with a plan that over the next few months, we would eliminate at least 5 of those medications, because one of those medications was causing a problem that he was taking 2 other medications for. He had an overlap in one of his medications where he was taking a similar drug in the same class. So that was kind of unnecessary. And then he was taking some other medication that could have been made into a combination. So we try to lower the pill burden so that people can be more compliant to their medication, because it's difficult. Taking 10 medications is really, really hard. If I can get you to a place where you're only taking 5 medications because you have had long-standing disease, I think that pill burden is a lot easier than where you were. So that's really a part of it. We have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Archer.
Hi, how you doing?
Good evening.
Yeah.
Good evening. My mind was so fucking so busy too good. When I wanted to say the second time I did that. But I'm working very hard. You know, the gentleman that called, I wish I could see his age. You know, 52 is now 58, right? You know, I'd be 58 in August, right?
Okay.
You saw me at the World Trade March, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't put on any weight. I never ran above 80 pounds in my life. You know, okay. I still jog the steps. You know, I had a little injury, so I don't really run no marathon, etc. Yeah. But I do a lot of yoga and a lot of strengthening of the ankle, the knees, the pelvis, the knee, I mean, the elbow, the shoulders. I keep all of my joints supple, you know, just by increasing blood flow to them, doing the yoga stretches. I found out that it actually strengthens me. And so, you know, weight-bearing exercise and walking and jogging actually increases bone density, but you know, I read a lot. And so the fast, remember the craze in the 80s about the low-fat diet, cholesterol-free and all that? You know, the new study showed that really was unnecessary. You know, peanut butter was cholesterol-free. Peanut butter never really contained cholesterol in the first place. So all of this is misinformation. And what I've learned is...
branding.
You know, cholesterol is, we have the low-density lipids and the high-density lipids, but, you know, this contemporary studies are showing that chemical damage or toxic damage to the cell walls causes the low-density lipids to cling to the cell walls in repairs, just like a Band-Aid. And what most people are not doing, they're not juxtaposing or correlating sugar intake with bad cholesterol production, as the liver does more of this production with the intake of high fructose corn syrup or sugar, cheap glucose. You see what I'm saying? And this is, these are facts, Dr. D. And also, what I'm looking at is it's a chemical that they put in plastics to make it harder. I think it's phthalates. Phthalates. I can't remember the chemical and the ingredients, but of course it has nitrogen. But it's very dangerous, and they've been doing this for years, and they have linked plastics to gonadal and sexual reproductive problems affecting spermogenesis and all of these different things. And I'm afraid that the truth is out there. You know, your voice is so soothing. There's another soothing, harmonious, mellifluous voice, Reach the Airways. That's Indira Fitzgerald, the lawyer. You know, I can listen to that lady all day. You know, I just listen to you guys. I'm proud of you guys to be on the radio dispensing the truth against the status quo. But Dr. D, you said something very integral about not pushing the medicine, the pills and stuff, right? Allopathic medicine. But the thing is, they sponsor these universities and they sponsor these fundings unless they do that. This is why they do that, so they could drive for big pharmaceutical interest. And so this is why all natural remedies, massage oils, pressure, puncture, acupuncture, all natural remedies, they have outlawed even some forms of chiropractic and essential oils. And so these are the things that people are lacking. You know, everything is just has to be so professionalized and so controlled. Like, it's frightening for me. And you see that they're making mistakes. They're just finding out a number of things. Like, for instance, I read in The Animal Connection, which is a book very old, it was about 20 years ago, some cancer viruses withstand pasteurization in milk from cows. This is a known fact. These things being in American Journal of Medicine from the early 80s and 70s, Dr. D. So common knowledge is not common. We're all being driven like sheep into any paradigm that the scientific community wants, because they're saying we're brainless, mindless, and thoughtless and just do what they say, Dr. D. Now you see the viral merry-go-round, Dr. D.
There has to be a balance.
I got Rossi on top of my head now, right? Some people don't talk to you no more once they see. You understand what I'm saying? That's what the pandemic has done for me. It's just put me. Let's be so busy working. You know, I see where they closed down Stephen Dillon today, Dr. D.
Are they having COVID cases?
Dr. D, I'm afraid that the world is being kidnapped and everybody's calling it the good.
Well,
time,
you know, it's almost. I find that like clockwork, the Bahamas follows the schedule.
One quick point. I friend, listen, I'm very disappointed. I know you're very learned and you're a scientist, but I'm upset that we had to send away a blood sample to be tested for carbon dioxide or toxicity. Right? Mm. So that simply means we don't have a gas spectrometer, mass spectrometer.
There's a lot of things that we lack.
We don't have that. That's embarrassing. And then the fact that you know you need an airtight syringe, gas, chromatography in order to detect carbon dioxide. But what I'm saying is, it's frightening because you're pushing a marijuana industry and you don't have a gas chromatograph. Why is it that no one is pushing? I feel like Fitzgerald, I'm in the voice in the wilderness. Why is it that people don't understand what other people are saying, that other people can contribute? Who doesn't have a stake? I'm not a stakeholder in the medical industry, so I'm saying it's the 21st, it's 2050. We don't have a gas chromatography machine, Dr. D. That's what you're trying to tell me. But we're pushing marijuana to go sell to people, and we can't analyze what's in it before we dispense it to the public, and you want to grow it hydroponically where every fool could put in the products he want in it?
Well, we don't have industry standards here either. You remember they were saying that we had to join the WTO in order to introduce industry standard in testing? All right, you have people who are thinking like this. You have people who don't understand the very concepts they push. So it's a really interesting place, the type of people that we do put in power, because we don't request for them to have this knowledge. We don't request for them to have any kind of standard. We tend to be voting out the other people. Yeah, so this is what we get.
I'm embarrassed also at the fact that you got a lot of ignoramuses who's pushing this climate change agenda when they know nothing about it. So you heard them. You heard me ask the question, how would you tell the difference between anthropogenic carbon versus carboniferous carbon? I've said on the radio over and over, carbon is the source of all life. No one seems to want to answer this question. Why is that, Dr. D? Am I crazy or am I fooled for asking that question? You're trying to tell me now plants are
the
carboniferous carbon versus anthropogenic carbon? You're trying to tell me the people can't tell the difference? They're farcing us, Dr. D?
I'm telling you that if you have a conversation with a lot of people who are in power, you have a one-on-one conversation with them, you would understand a lot better.
But you know something, Dr. D, but honestly, we have to get into this paradigm. I'd like you to do a whole show on cholesterol, you know. I mean, like, on another, because I'm only giving you an hour now, right?
No. It's actually my choice because I've become really busy, and I do have a one-year-old in the house.
Oh, stop. You guess he's doing all right.
I had to readjust some things, and I was glad the station really was like, you know, keep the show, Dr. Archer. We know you're kind of busy, but keep the show. So yeah, this is kind of like my compromise.
I hope they have Indira Fitzgerald on more regular. You know, who don't like that lady is really not anybody because she's decent. I heard her, man, you know, between you and her, I think you'll take the cake. Bless up. Have a good day.
Thank you. Always a great contribution, always kind of thinking out of the box. And so it's always good to have you with us. So we're just going to go through these last couple really quickly before we run out of time. I just want you to hear them. So if you need to incorporate them in your life, and if you need more help with your cholesterol, you want to reach out to your physician. Of course, I always forget to say brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical care needs. You can check us out on Facebook and Instagram and, our website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. And we have a button now. You can just sign up for NHI if you need to. So some of the other foods before we go that are really, really good if you're struggling with your cholesterol, of course, is your garlic, which is something that you can introduce to your cooking. You know, a lot of Bahamians traditionally didn't cook with a lot of garlic. But garlic can be pretty good in small quantities, and it's really powerful, and it has a lot of active components that decrease your bad LDL, and it's pretty strong with that, and it reduces your heart disease risk as well. They have one here that I don't really agree with, so I'm not going to really keep it on the list. They mentioned soy, but I'm not a lover of soy just because of the estrogen that soy helps to produce. And there's some other issues with soy and how it's produced and all the stuff that I have an issue with. But there are a lot of vegetarians and different people that do have soy in their diet, so soy is on the list. Of course, in general, your vegetables, which are rich in fiber and antioxidants, and of course, low in calories. So vegetables allow you to get more food in with less calories. And so, of course, your vegetables. Different types of teas. So we talked about green teas before, and they contain some beneficial components such as catechins and quercetin. So a lot of people were using quercetin during the pandemic as one of the things to lower inflammation in the body. And so you can get quercetin in natural green teas as well. And so drinking these teas can lower your cholesterol and reduce your heart disease, right? And you want to try to get really clean organic teas, nothing with a lot of pesticides, because it's a problem with a lot of food is really the processing. So I'm not a person that totally against meat. I think meat is good in small quantities, but you have to really get a high quality or high caliber of meat in order to get the benefits. Of course, your dark green leafy vegetables, such as your kale and your spinach, which contain a lot of lutein and carotenoids, as well as antioxidants, they are really, really good at helping the body to excrete cholesterol. So you want to get your dark green leafy vegetables in there. Extra virgin olive oil. So this is a good replacement for a lot of the processed oils. If you can get really clean virgin olive oil, usually you'll find that the really good ones are going to come out of Italy and parts of Europe. So really take a look at your olive oil and see what it is. It's going to be a little bit more costly than other oils, so you're going to use it more sparingly. So I can take a bottle of olive oil and use it for a very long time, and this is how you're able to rectify the cost with the amount. Because if you're using just a little bit of olive oil to saute your vegetables or to do certain things with, you'll find that you can stretch it. See, when you're frying is when you're really kind of like throwing a lot of oil in there. So if you're moving away from frying and you're just using a light oil for your salads or for, you know, just kind of sauteing your vegetables and stuff, you'll find that you don't use a lot of oil and you don't need that big gallon of oil that you're going to buy. So you spend a little bit more on the olive oil and use a lot less. So olive oil has a 30% lower risk of major heart events if you're using olive oil. So your stroke, your heart attacks, all those things go down, and it's even better. You know, 52 talked about the low fat diet, but adding these good fats, these olive oil to your diet actually does that. Okay, caller, we have one more second. I'll just let you in. Go ahead, caller. You have the last 30 seconds.
How you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. You got 30 seconds. We're almost done.
Oh, man, listen. One quick question. Type 2 diabetes. What they call intermediate fasting. I'm looking all over the website, mm-hmm. and the stuff that I'm reading said that it's very good. Especially yeah. for folks who are in their 50s, it's an 18-hour intermediate fasting. It starts to burn all the calories and the thing that you eat the day before. What do you think about that?
Yeah, intermittent fasting can be really good, especially if you're like an early diabetic. But when you're doing something like intermittent fasting as a diabetic, you need to do it with your doctor to make sure that you're doing it correctly, because you don't want to go hypoglycemic and you don't want to go hyperglycemic when you eat. So being a diabetic makes it a little bit more difficult to do the intermittent fasting, especially if you're on medication. So I would have a sit down with my provider, with my family physician, and just have that kind of discussion. You know, I want to do this. Like, how is that going to affect me taking my medication and certain things like that? You're going to have to be able to monitor yourself as much as possible, because you don't want to have these dips and lows during the time of your fasting. But if you can find a physician that can work with you through it, you may be, depending on the stage of diabetes that you're in, it can be very, very helpful in controlling your cholesterol, your
I'm
fat.
I'm not on medication at this time, though.
Okay, you're not on medication. Yet. So no. You're a lifestyle diabetic.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, like I said, I would talk to my doctor about it. I would work out a schedule on how I would monitor my sugar and see how you do. And this may be something that you can do. So not being on medication probably will make this a lot easier for you if you're already managing your diabetes on lifestyle.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so we're totally out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening. We did get through the list. So, you know, you want to try and lower your cholesterol, lower your risk for heart disease, keep yourself and your heart healthy. And we're going to see you all next week with another exciting show on The Doctors and with me, Dr. D. Archer. Good night and have a good one. And see you next week, Tuesday, on Guardian Radio 96.9. Good night. Thank you for watching online.